What are some common health conditions that you see in the practice that have been linked to poor oral health?
There's about 57 diseases that have an oral health component to them. Our oral microbiome is our second largest microbiome, second to our gut. Really, our mouth is where digestion begins and really is the start of our gut. These bacteria, they can translocate from the mouth to different areas of the body.
Do you guys take a deeper look of where is that infection coming from, or what is causing an infection in the tooth that would create that decay?
Infection doesn't just happen out of nowhere. There's something driving it. The tooth starting to break down and develop decay. That's not just from sugar. That's not just from poor brushing. That's from mineral depletion, mouth breathing, a more acidic environment. The mouth really is one of the most mineral-rich and mineral-dependent areas in our body.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Cancer Proof Living. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Michelle, a 9-year non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer survivor, mom, and certified integrative nutrition health coach. After cancer, I wanted more than just survival, so I built the healing roadmap that I couldn't find. Now I guide cancer-conscious humans and survivors to detox, rebuild, and thrive. Today, I sat down with Amber White. Amber is an integrative health practitioner and biological dental hygienist specializing in the oral systemic connection. Her work focuses on helping both patients and practitioners understand how oral health reflects the body's internal environment, including mineral balance, the oral microbiome, hormones, and nervous system regulation. Through her programs, mentorship, and education, Amber teaches a more comprehensive approach to oral health, one that moves beyond symptom management and into understanding the patterns driving dysfunction. I love this conversation so much. We talked about something that most people completely overlook when it comes to healing, prevention, and even cancer risk: your oral health. And Amber shares her thoughts on root canals, fluoride, mouth breathing, and so much more. She also shares with us the link between oral infections and cancer prevention. It truly is an eye-opening episode, and I'm so excited for you guys to hear it. So grab a pen and paper because you will definitely need it, and let's get it started. All right, Amber, I'm so excited to have you on Cancer Proof Living. I'm so honored to have you on this podcast. I think your expertise is going to be invaluable to my audience. And we were talking a little bit offline how oral health is just such a big piece of the health puzzle that many people aren't connecting to. And I think that we're all a little in the dark on this subject. So I think today's just going to be really fantastic, and you're going to give us so much to think about. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Definitely an important conversation for our overall health. So hopefully I can bring some information, knowledge, some tips for what you can do at home and what to look for.
Awesome. So tell me how you got into this line of work. What led you here? Is it, you know, a personal story for you, or did you just kind of fall into the space?
Yeah, I actually went to school a little later in life for dental hygiene. I started in psychology. It was really about wanting to help people on this whole approach, right? And then I started in dental hygiene, and I was probably only 3 years in, and, you know, the courses that we take for continuing education, I just started looking in different areas. I started looking more into nutrition and more whole body education, but I didn't even really know that biological dentistry was really a thing yet until I actually just stumbled upon an ad on Indeed one night after a day in practice where I knew that the way I was practicing had to be different. It had to be more elevated. Patients were coming back with the same exact presentation, the same exact symptoms, you know, the same tartar buildup on their teeth that they had 3 months prior, right? Nothing was really changing. And I just knew there had to be more. And that's really when I found biological dentistry. And once I found that, there was no turning back for me. It was like I wanted to learn everything and really start to connect the dots for my patients.
Okay, so tell us what biological dentistry is. Like, let's break it down, because I'm sure a lot of people don't know what that is on any level.
Yeah. So, you know, you may hear terms like biological dentistry, holistic dentistry, functional dentistry, and there's nuances to each. But what it really means is caring for the mouth, but also honoring the body in the process, right? So it really is taking this whole body approach to care and looking at how the different systems of the body work together and how integrated everything is. We really think of the mouth as the gateway to the body, really where so many things enter, but also a mirror to the body where we can see reflections of systemic disease patterns just by looking inside of the mouth. In biological dentistry, we also think about, of course, materials and, you know, different things that we're looking at. So we're always looking at the most biocompatible, body-friendly things that we are placing inside of the mouth.
Okay, so does biological dentistry do different procedures or different types of care than traditional dentistry? And also, second part to that question, is there different things you're looking at that maybe a traditional dentist isn't looking at?
Yeah, so there's definitely different things that are brought in when you are working in biological dentistry. So a lot of different healing modalities, so things like ozone therapy, there might be lasers involved, red light. In surgeries, we might use something like platelet-rich fibrin, which is using the patient's own stem cells to support their healing and repair after a surgery. So there's a lot of different healing modalities, but there's also just really looking at this whole body approach as to how else can we involve the body in the healing process, right? So it's not just treating a tooth in isolation or treating, you know, disease and thinking, oh, okay, we have this disease present, we treat it. It's more of, why did this disease process begin? What is it in the host, the patient, the person that allowed this disease to begin, right? So we actually want to look at getting to the root cause and really, you know, diving into a history, a timeline. How did all of this happen?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I feel like it's like the functional approach to medicine, right? What's the root cause? What's driving this? Because this is clearly the result of something else or something to that effect. So then when you guys take on new patients and you have somebody come to the office, are you sitting down and doing just a full deep dive into their past health, current health? Like, are you going deeper and asking those questions as part of the consultation?
Absolutely. I would say in most biological practices, that initial consult is usually about a 2-hour visit where you really are getting a deep dive. You're really looking at a much more detailed intake form, much more detailed medical history, always looking for a timeline of events as to when these disease processes occurred. And oftentimes we're also doing like diagnostic imaging and things like that during that visit. I would say most biological practices are doing cone beam x-rays, which is that 3D x-ray of the jaw. So it allows us to actually see a 3D image of what's happening in the mouth, the bones, sinuses, nerve pathways, airway. So really getting a more comprehensive view of everything. A lot of times there might be other testing that's involved, like things like salivary testing to look at the oral microbiome or mineral testing to look at the systemic patterns that we see a lot reflected in the mouth. So practice to practice, it can vary a little bit, but there's always a more comprehensive approach, really looking into the history.
Wow, that's really amazing. 2 hours, sitting down with the doctor for 2 hours, getting like a full workup. I mean, that's a game changer. And I'm really glad that you brought up oral microbiome too, because I remember a couple of years ago I was at the dentist and they were talking to me about my oral microbiome. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I know my gut microbiome, but I didn't realize that our mouths have an microbiome. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what does that entail? How do we take care of it? What does that mean? Everything.
Yeah. I mean, our oral microbiome is our second largest microbiome, second to our gut, right? But we also have this bi-directional relationship between our mouth and our gut. Really, our mouth is where digestion begins and really is the start of our gut, right? So these bacteria, they can translocate from the mouth to different areas of the body. The gut is one of the easiest ones. But in the mouth, we have about 700 different species of bacteria. Of course, some are more pathogenic. Others are commensal or more helpful bacteria that we see in the mouth. And the whole goal is really to create balance between these bacteria, right? We never want to wipe out everything because that's when these opportunistic pathogens can thrive. We really are looking to create balance, right? A healthy homeostasis of these bacteria to really have a healthy mouth and body.
And so just like our gut, right, when we can receive good bacteria through our food that helps feed our gut, is it the same thing through our mouth as well? Is that where the bacteria is coming from? Or is it coming from other parts of our body that's kind of nurturing our mouth?
Yeah, it's both. So we definitely want to be incorporating those prebiotic, probiotic rich foods. But we also want to think about what else is happening inside the mouth. Sometimes if we have an oral infection or different things happening inside the mouth, certain bacteria are going to harbor in those areas. So that's something we always want to think about too. But bacteria, right, they don't stay in one area. And our mouth is, right, it's obviously the entry point. But also if we have inflammation in our gum tissue, that creates a reservoir for those bacteria to get into systemic circulation. So it kind of can go both ways.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I could see that. It travels throughout the body. If it's starting in the gums, then it can go other places too. Okay, so what are some common health conditions that you see in the practice that have been linked to poor oral health?
There are so many. There's about 57 diseases that have an oral health component to them. So a lot of things that we see probably most frequently, we see there's a lot of different oral manifestations or oral clues to autoimmune disease or thyroid disease. We can also see links to cardiovascular disease. There's just so many things that we can see in the mouth that give us indication. It can give us indication as to what your gut health looks like. Right? We might see signs that we have different allergies or sensitivities to different things, right? I'm always looking at the tongue, the tissues, the teeth. The tongue gives us a lot of clues into digestion, how our liver and kidneys are functioning. So lots of different things that we can see in the mouth.
That's crazy. So if someone's coming in and you are connecting the dots between an autoimmune disorder and their mouth, what does that connection look like? Like, how does that happen?
So, you know, it is really looking at their history, talking to them about what symptoms they're having. But we know that chronic low-grade inflammation is one of the biggest drivers of disease. So we can oftentimes see that chronic low-grade inflammation. We can see certain tissue changes and texture changes in the gum tissue that can be indicative. So really, you know, bleeding response, a lot of times, especially, you know, when I went through school, like the big thing is if someone's gums are bleeding, it's automatically we need to floss more, floss better. And so often there are times that is the case, but oftentimes I have seen patients that have really good hygiene at home. They are brushing regularly, they are flossing, but they still have that chronic inflammation and bleeding response. So that's when I start to ask deeper questions, to get more information on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really does connect the dots between our mouth not being separate from the rest of our body. It's all interconnected and it's showing up in all different areas too. Like when people think autoimmune, it's like, oh, your tissues or your thyroid or in different organs, but it's also showing up in your mouth. And I think it's just something that a lot of people don't know, right? And when we're going to the dentist, when we're getting checked out, not asking certain questions or even seeing the right kind of dentist to understand how to better take care of your mouth. So it's not that vicious cycle of, you know, is one feeding the other, so to speak, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So then in your opinion, how does oral health relate to cancer risk and cancer prevention? Because there's a lot of talk out there on how these two are so intimately connected. So I would love to hear your opinion on that.
Yeah. I mean, like we were saying, the mouth is really connected to systemic health. There is actually a fairly recent study from Johns Hopkins. I'm not sure if you saw this, but there is a specific bacteria that's called Fusobacterium nucleatum. And the study is showing that this bacteria can drive DNA damage, tumor growth, directly linked to breast cancer. And this response is heightened in those that carry that BRCA1 gene. So even more ability for these tumors to metastasize in the body. But that same bacteria has been deeply connected to colorectal tumors for many, many years. It's also found in esophageal and pancreatic cancer. So there's definitely a correlation between the bacteria that are in our mouth and that their ability to translocate into these other areas. We also just think about infection, right? The mouth is one of these areas that can have infection, whether that be a tooth, a previously treated root canal tooth. You know, with that cone beam, that 3D x-ray, a lot of times dentists are finding hidden infections, right? Infections that have no symptoms that would not necessarily show up on a two-dimensional x-ray. But if we have infection and chronic inflammation in our mouth, it's going to have a systemic effect on the body. So definitely want to be able to look deeper. There's also, you know, the concept of tooth organ meridians, how each tooth is energetically linked to different organ systems of the body. So that's another thing that we can look at as not necessarily a diagnostic tool, but a tool that gives us just more information in being able to connect the dots and get back to the root cause.
Wow, that's amazing. And I think I did hear that study, but I remember hearing the study and how it was connected to colorectal cancer. That serum bacteria. And so it's really strange. I remember I coach a lot of cancer survivors on how to recover and then how to prevent reoccurrence and just kind of rebuild their life post post-treatments. And I've heard so like hundreds of stories of how people found their cancer and, you know, symptoms that they were having and things like that. And I found a lot of breast cancer clients of mine have said, oh, I had a tooth infection on my left side. I'm like, well, what side was your breast cancer on? I'm like, oh, the left side. Or I had a root canal on the right side and my breast cancer is on the right side. And there's, you know, and I'm not a doctor. I don't know, but it's after you hear so many stories so many times, you can start to put together a lot of commonalities. And that was one where I was like, well, clearly our mouth is so interconnected to cancer and these infections, right? If your infection is in your gum and your bone, of course, it's going to travel other places if it's going unseen. But I don't think that people are talking about it a lot. And I don't think people are aware of it. You know, even one of my clients, she's like, had two root canals in the last year. And can you explain why people need root canals and why they could potentially be dangerous and what the alternative could be to that root canal?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a big topic and, you know, there's a lot of different views on this, but I love the way that you worded it, right? Why might somebody need a root canal? You know, and we might hear people say, no one will ever need a root canal, right? But the goal behind a root canal, right, they're not inherently bad. They weren't designed to make a person sick. They were designed to most often get a patient out of pain, right? So the tooth becomes infected to the point that it is affecting the nerve of the tooth. So when a root canal is performed, the nerve and the blood supply of the tooth is removed and filled with a filling material called guttapercha and sealed. So we're maintaining that tooth structure in the mouth, but we're removing the blood supply nerve, the life force of the tooth, right? With that, right, it can get a patient out of pain. I've seen, and, you know, a lot of times we might even see a young child who has an accident at, say, baseball where they have trauma and they have a root canal very young. And in those cases, that might be the best option for them as they're still developing. But I always want to think about the actual individual that, you know, is in front of me. Certain people are more susceptible, right? So if someone does have chronic health issues, a root canal may not be the best option for them. And this is something to talk about with your dentist. But when those teeth are cleaned out, we don't just have one clean canal in the tooth, right? We have all these accessory canals, these little microtubules, where we can't 100% sterilize the tooth. So if there are trace amounts of bacteria in a tooth in a compromised person who has other health issues, right, those bacteria can release endotoxins like lipopolysaccharides that fuel inflammation in the body, dysregulate the immune system. So always want to think about who the person is, what their terrain looks like, what their constitution looks like, and kind of go from there. I would say, like I said, not all root canals are inherently bad. There might be some people that say they all need to be out. I think they all need to be monitored, right? So if you have had root canals, getting a cone beam x-ray to evaluate between the roots of those teeth and see if there is any type of recurrent infection, I think that's really, really important. I also think I have seen a lot of patients who have had different types of cancer who have had root canals on the correlating meridian, right? And I don't think of that as just a coincidence because I've seen it hundreds of times with patients. So it's something that I'm always using to just kind of take a deeper dive. But if I was working with someone like you are who was recently diagnosed with cancer, I think the mouth is a really important place to look.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think that that's really smart, a smart way to look at it because it's bio-individual. You're looking at everyone individually. It's not like a one size fits all or like all are bad, all are good. It's really comes down to the patient, their history, and what we're currently working with, right? So if a tooth is getting infected and you're having like multiple root canals, do you guys take a deeper look of like, where is that infection coming from or how or what is causing an infection in the tooth that would create that decay or breaking down of a tooth?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think this is huge. I think in the dental practice, being able to look deeper, but I also think especially in this type of healthcare, collaboration is such a big piece of it. So that might be collaborating with other providers, functional doctors, or different providers to really get that full scope, right? I think there's a lot of things we can do. Infection doesn't just happen out of nowhere. There's something driving it. And so it really is kind of peeling back those layers. I think that's like the thing that I love the most is being able to investigate and be a detective. I want to know everything. I want to know why something started in the first place. But even just back to the tooth starting to break down and develop decay, right? That's not just from sugar. That's not just from poor brushing, right? That's from mineral depletion, mouth breathing, a more acidic environment. So why is that happening? So we need to kind of like take a step back sometimes to be able to move forward with the best approach.
Okay, that makes sense for sure. Yeah, because I would think that if you're getting multiple infections, it's not just from poor brushing or poor hygiene. There's something deeper going on. And so at your practice and where you work, do you guys do root canals or is it a case-by-case basis?
Yeah, so I work mostly outside of clinical currently. So I work with a lot of dentists and hygienists who are moving into a more biological approach. But the practice that I was at for about 4 years managing, we did not perform root canals. There are some biological dentists who are using more advanced techniques using microscopes and different more biocompatible materials. There are very few, I would say, even in the country, that are doing that. I would say most biological practices are not doing root canals, but I'm aware.
And so it kind of sounds like, to me at least, like when we're talking about root canals, that it's just a little bit of a Band-Aid that you're putting on top of something that, okay, we cleaned it out, we're filling it up, we cut the blood supply and the nerve off, but the infection isn't gone. It's just dormant or it's pushed down or pushed in a different place. Like this is kind of just a Band-Aid of what's going on a deeper level, right?
Exactly, right. It's never been meant to be a long-term, lifelong solution. It's been a solution to maintain the space, right? So we're not taking a tooth out. We have someone that's still developing, getting someone out of pain. Dental pain, if anyone's experienced it, can be pretty bad. And so that really is initially what this procedure is designed for, not necessarily designed for, you know, a lifetime. And that's why many people will have them. And then later if they become reinfected because the bacteria really has a place to harbor. That's when they would have them removed. But it really is taking a look and seeing if there is reinfection. When we think of bacteria, we think of reinfection around these teeth. We're always thinking about the individual, right? Someone who is in a perfect state of health having this procedure done, you know, it may be stable for a long time, but then later down the road, their health becomes more compromised. They develop some type of chronic disease. That might be where we actually see that reinfection because the host response has changed.
Mm-hmm. So from a biological dentistry perspective, if you see somebody that, if you're seeing a patient, say I come into you and I am somebody that's a cancer survivor, I had Hashimoto's, right? And I'm coming to you and you're like, ooh, she might have something that would constitute a root canal, right? Some sort of infection. From a biological dentistry perspective, how would you begin to take care of that? Or how would you help the body heal that in a more natural state versus recommending the root canal?
Yeah, it really depends on the person and the state of what's happening. So if there is a way to save that tooth and prevent it from having a root canal, a lot of dentists will perform what's called biomimetic dentistry, where, you know, they're really utilizing really like a very layered technique to restore the tooth. If the tooth is infected, you know, the only option there is really to remove the source, which is the tooth. So a lot of times those teeth will be removed and replaced with a ceramic implant. In that case, it just really depends on the extent and severity of the tooth, whether it is decay that's approaching the nerve or if the tooth itself has a significant infection.
Okay. So, but there's no way to tell, like, if the infection has gone into the bone or, like, how would you clean out the infection if it went deeper than just being at that surface level of the tooth?
So that would be looking at that 3D image. That 3D image would be able to show, that cone beam x-ray would be able to show where the infection actually is. We can look between the roots of the teeth. You can see if the infection has spread into the bone. So if that's the case, right, that whole infection would need to be cleared out, including the tooth.
How would you clear that out?
So it would be removing the tooth. They follow very specific protocols. A lot of times it is, you know, cleaning it out with ozone, which is antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral, drawing the patient's blood with and creating PRF, that platelet-rich fibrin, to place back in the healing site. So a lot of different things that they might include to help the body heal in that case.
That is so interesting. And obviously so smart and just thinking about and taking care of the body as a whole in such a different way, right? Not just the teeth, but like really looking deeper. And I hope anybody that's listening can understand that too, right? And biological dentistry is what we would want to go towards if we wanted to have our whole body treated in such a way and to make sure the infections are gone and just look at dentistry in a holistic perspective, correct?
Absolutely. Yes.
So you said something else a few minutes ago that really sparked my interest. You were talking about the minerals in our mouth as well. Tell me about the different minerals in our mouth and how they play such an important part in our health.
Yeah, I talk about this a lot. The mouth really is one of the most mineral-rich and mineral-dependent areas in our body. We naturally have a demineralization and remineralization process that our mouth goes through multiple times a day. And there's a lot of talk about hydroxyapatite, which is what our teeth are actually made of, 97% of our teeth, right? So hydroxyapatite is calcium and phosphorus, right? So we need those minerals for healthy, strong enamel and dentin to prevent cavities and to fuel that natural remineralization process that we're going through every day. So when we think about minerals, not only do they help our mouth to prevent decay, prevent cavities from forming, but they're really also very indicative of how well our tissue can heal. You know, our gum tissue, if we have chronic inflammation, we may see more recession if we are depleted in certain minerals. We also think you just mentioned Hashimoto's. We can look at that calcium potassium ratio and see how optimized the thyroid is. We know the thyroid is the master regulator of the body. So with impaired thyroid function, even if it's cellular and not necessarily on a blood test, We may see delayed healing in a patient who's having periodontal work or surgical work. So always wanting to bring balance back to those minerals. We also think in biological dentistry and in any type of dentistry, the body is required to detoxify, right? And in biological dentistry, they may be removing heavy metals or different materials. We want to make sure the body can actually clear them. So we get a lot of insight into that as well.
And minerals assist with detoxification. So that makes sense too. I had somebody else on the podcast a little while ago, Dr. Stephen Cabral, and I did his hair analysis test, and it tests heavy metals and minerals. And so we were talking and had a really great conversation around minerals and the importance of it. But this just goes that much more deeper how, again, right? It affects our detoxification, it affects our health and our stress and our adrenals and everything, but it also affects our mouth and our microbiome and our healing, it sounds like, and everything like that.
Yeah, it has such an impact.
Yeah. And that's, so do you recommend, or do you think it's important for people to get their minerals tested, you know, at least like once a year to kind of see where they're at? You know, sometimes I know when we're so stressed out or if we're balancing a lot of stuff, our minerals can get so easily depleted, and that would be a time to supplement, right? Or a time to help with stress management or kind of shift things a little bit. But because this plays such a big piece in our health, it sounds like that mineral testing would be quite significant at the end of the day.
I recommend it to everybody. It's a test I run a lot with my clients. I work with a lot of dentists who are now bringing this testing into their practice because it really is so important for oral and overall health. I definitely think once a year or even more if we're working on something to retest, I think that it is essential.
Okay. So, and he was saying that if you do a blood test for your minerals, which it does show just kind of a snapshot in time, but how the hair test really shows a 60 to 90 day story of what's kind of going in your body. When you're testing it with patients, are you doing blood testing for that to just kind of get that moment in time, or are you doing more hair tests?
Yeah, I'm doing hair tests to see that tissue level, especially if I'm working with people on their oral health, if I'm preparing patients for treatment or supporting them post-treatment, I want to make sure that their minerals are optimized, right? If they're going through, say, something like smart removal, where they're removing mercury fillings from their mouth, I want to make sure that their minerals are optimized, their detox pathways are open, be able to really support them post-treatment. But we can see things even, you know, if you're going to the dentist every 6 months and every 6 months you have heavy tartar buildup on your teeth and, you know, you're being told to brush better and floss more and maybe come in for a more frequent recall, that calcification on your teeth could be related to mineral imbalances as well. You see that a lot.
I was going to say, how would imbalances show up in the mouth? But it sounds like the tartar buildup or a heavier tartar buildup is a common sign of that.
Yeah, I worked with a client recently who was going to have her dental cleaning every 8 weeks because she was building up so much tartar on her teeth between visits. And a lot of people are building up a lot. And in reality, right, her minerals were off. And when we're able to stabilize calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, these different minerals, we were able to, she went back to her dentist and had a glowing checkup, right? They were like, what are you doing differently? But we were just working on products. We're working on bringing balance back. She also had tooth sensitivity because she was depleted in certain minerals. So all of those things kind of cleared up naturally because she had great home care to begin with. Her body was just, you know, in that state of stress and building up more calculus on the teeth. So
that is so wild. That's so crazy. You know, that actually reminds me too, because I have a lot of people that listen and follow that are cancer patients. And I know for me, after my cancer diagnosis, chemo like stripped all of the enamel off my teeth. So I always had sensitive teeth, like even young, as a young girl, but after cancer, it was so horrific. It was so hard. And I feel like a lot of people suffer with symptoms like this, and You know, if you go to the regular dentist, they give their recommendations. But if someone were to come to a biological dentist, what would be some suggestions to help rebuild that enamel that are just a little bit more natural?
Yeah, I mean, I think as simple as bringing in some of those trace minerals that the body is deficient in, if we have the hair test, we can know exactly what we want to bring in. If we have people that are very sensitive, I do really like to bring in homeopathy and cell salts. It can be really helpful to strengthen the teeth and the bone. But with sensitivity, I always kind of want to look at those core four minerals, the calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium. If we can bring those into balance, a lot of times sensitivity can dissipate or at least be reduced significantly. Ozone can also, as ozone gas, can desensitize the teeth. A lot of times if someone's having a filling, they'll actually use that ozone gas underneath so we don't have that post-treatment sensitivity. So that's another thing that can be done in a biological office where that can help with tooth sensitivity as well.
Okay. And is there, and I'm sure that there is because everything's connected, but is there a role that hormones play in gum health and inflammation? Because again, like a lot of people going through treatments or coming out of treatments, your hormones are manipulated. Sometimes they're shut down, or even women going through perimenopause and menopause, right? Does that affect our gums in any way?
Absolutely. Yeah. When we are going through these hormonal changes, we can definitely see a lot more breakdown in the mouth. We can see a lot more changes in the tissue integrity. So estrogen really helps with the circulation within the tissue. So perimenopause, right, we have these estrogen fluctuations. We can see more bleeding response. We can see more thinning of tissue because estrogen regulates collagen, right? So as we get older, right, we think about our skin losing collagen, but our tissue in our mouth is strongly related to collagen synthesis. So as collagen breaks down in our skin, it's breaking down in our tissue as well. And as estrogen declines or fluctuates, we're losing that collagen production. So we start to see more thin gum tissue. We might start to see more recession. So there's so much that we can see in the mouth. Also, you know, we know minerals drive hormones. So when we see that, right, we have that mineral depletion, hormonal fluctuations and changes, that's when we can really see a lot more response in the mouth. So whether that be bleeding, the chronic low-grade inflammation and recession are like three big things that we see.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense, too, because estrogen, I feel like, is in every part of our, you know, helps with every different part of our body. It's so important. And I'm just honestly, like, I know in the back of my head that everything is so integrated and connected. Although our healthcare system does not work in that way, you know, intuitively, we all know that. But just to hear you talk about how it's all connected, it's like, of course, you know, it makes so much sense. I can really honestly relate to you. I'm sure as you were going through school and figuring this out, how could you go a more traditional route when you're hearing this and you're like, well, yes, that makes sense. And yes, we can help people on such a deeper level. And even sometimes just by helping, like you said, with minerals, you're also supporting so many areas of the body and helping balance things out in such a different way. And the result is better gums, better teeth, better microbiome, I'm sure, and everything like that. It's just so wild.
Yeah, I mean, it really is all connected. And I feel like once you start to learn all of these different things, right? Like I said, there's no going back, but it also just gives you, I feel like as the patient, as the human, I feel like it gives you your power back, right? You have the ability to change your health. You know, by implementing just tiny habits, tiny rituals into your day, right? You don't have to accept your health at the level it is today. And I think so many people, so many women are walking around experiencing a ton of different symptoms that we've just normalized. And a lot of things in the mouth, we've normalized things like bleeding gums, inflammation, different things. And, you know, they're common, but there's a way to shift that and actually shift your entire health by doing that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. We normalize so much or make excuses until it's so bad that our current reality is so shifted from it, we don't really make a change on it. A lot of people aren't walking around being preventative or sometimes even just get overwhelmed by this information. To me, it's empowering too. I'm like, yes, you have the power to change something. Just one hair sample test can change your whole supplements, you know, understanding how you're absorbing minerals, like everything. It's just, it's so important. And I do know that it can be overwhelming. You know, I think that I was put into this, I was forced into this, like cancer forced me into looking at health a different way. But now once you're on that side of it, I can never go back to just looking at it in like a traditional way, because it is so interconnected and so important too. And speaking of that, so I heard you say earlier too, when we were talking about like tooth decay and the root canals and stuff, you were saying that sometimes an acidic environment can be really harmful for our mouth. So I want to piggyback off that a little bit to really understand what a good diet looks like that would support our oral health at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really, really important to make sure that we have a diet that is rich in minerals and also rich in fat-soluble vitamins. So things that we could include in our diet, I mean, I think bone broth is an incredible option, right? Having protein, collagen, glycine, all these minerals that our body needs. We also want to think about things like healthy fats, like grass-fed butter and organ meats are great for oral health. Grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, these different things are going to be really essential. Leafy greens, seeds, things like that, that actually help to balance the alkalinity. But I would always say we want a diet that's rich in A, D, E, and K. I think Weston Price has kind of like the best layout for oral health. So that's a great resource, Weston Price Foundation, to really look at bringing these nutrients back into the diet. But I'm always thinking about minerals too, and, you know, food sources of that. So,
yeah, I know it always starts with food. Like if we can pause supplements and get everything more naturally where our body can absorb it, the better we're off. And so that makes sense. You know, when I think about like organ meats, it's so nutrient dense and so full of minerals, and grass-fed meat and obviously all the good fats, the wild-caught salmon, the seeds and butter and olive oil, you know, all of these things that really help strengthen our body. So it's not only just good for other areas, but it's also good for a microbiome. Is there, and I remember you saying too, like a good way to balance your oral microbiome is with prebiotic and probiotic foods. That also helps that area too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Oh, that's so crazy. I mean, it's not, but it is. You know, you can understand that bacteria benefits like every part of your body, but also the balance of your mouth, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think is one of the worst things that people are doing daily for their oral health?
There's a few, probably. I would say mouth breathing is a big one that most people don't even realize they're doing. But if we're mouth breathing, we're creating an environment for disease to happen, right? We're depleting the body of nitric oxide and making it more acidic, more prone to decay and different things. As far as products go, a lot of people are using an antiseptic mouthwash.
Yes, let's talk about mouthwash. Is it just wiping everything out and killing our microbiome?
Destroying everything. Even on the label, it will say, you know, kills 99.9% of bacteria. And we don't want that, right? Because it's not selective. It's not just taking out those pathogenic bacteria. It's wiping out all of the healthy bacteria as well. And we have plenty of different healthy bacteria in the mouth that help regulate inflammation, that help with cell turnover, that help with, you know, fighting off the other bacteria, right? We never want to wipe everything out, because then we are opening up an area to more opportunistic pathogens to take hold, right? A lot of times we actually have much more pathogenic bacteria after using those types of mouthwashes for so long.
That's very interesting. And I believe it too. Yeah, you're sterilizing your whole mouth over and over. So if nothing's there to control or help mitigate any kind of inflammation, you're kind of starting from ground zero every time you use mouthwash. What about the mouthwashes that are not alcohol-based?
Yeah, I do think there's some good mouthwashes that people can use. It depends. I think everything should be personalized. So say I did have a saliva test and there were a lot of pathogenic overgrowth, there might be some targeted mouthwashes that I would use to help kind of bring those bacteria down and reestablish some of the healthy bacteria. And there are other mouthwashes that are cleaner that, you know, you might be able to use more regularly. But I would say a lot of the mouthwashes on the market are more for like targeted use for different things. Someone who might have gum disease or periodontal disease or going through surgery. There's one that I really like called Stella Life, which is a homeopathic mouth rinse. And that one can be really soothing for the tissue. I really like just a warm saltwater rinse. I like an aloe vera swish swallow is really good for our tissue. So I don't always use an actual rinse for everybody. I use them more targeted when I'm working with certain bacteria, but I'd rather do something that's just like really soothing for the tissue.
And the aloe vera, are you like the aloe vera juice, the or like pure aloe vera that you mix?
Yes, juice is what I would do. I like just to like swish and swallow it because it's good for our mouth and our gut. So it can be really soothing. So I think something like that daily over, you know, these antiseptic mouthwashes can be so much more beneficial for our tissue and our mouth.
I love aloe. I use aloe juice a lot, especially in the morning because it's so good for the gut and healing the gut. So I'm glad to hear that it's good for oral care too. That's good. That's important. Okay. So then what do you think about like oil pulling and tongue scraping? Are those good for our mouths or not so good?
Yes. I think everybody should be tongue scraping. That's where a lot of those bacteria are going to multiply. So first thing in the morning, before we even drink water, it's going to help stimulate our digestion as well. So just a few, you know, scrapes, 5 to 10 scrapes. Oil pulling, I also love. It can be really soothing for the tissue. Coconut oil is naturally antibacterial. So it's not something that I necessarily recommend every day because we go back to, we don't want to wipe out all the bacteria, but I really love to do it a few times a week. It can be really soothing and really help balance the bacteria.
Okay. Yeah. Tongue scraping too. And I read or heard, or I can't remember, but it'll never leave my mind where, you know, when we're asleep, we are detoxing, you know, our lymphatic system's detoxing, everything is detoxifying when we're sleeping, right? And so when you wake up in the morning, a lot of that toxicity or toxins land on our tongue. And so tongue scraping first thing, not swallowing, getting everything out of your mouth also helps support your lymphatic system, you know, to clean out and to, you know, support your mouth too.
Definitely.
And what are your thoughts on fluoride? I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on fluoride, but what are your thoughts on fluoride? And for people who are going to the traditional dentist and getting like those fluoride treatments once a year, using toothpaste with fluoride in it, I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
I mean, I don't recommend fluoride for my clients or patients. I don't use fluoride for myself. You know, I think that this is another one of those topics that there's a lot of views on. But I just think that at the end of the day, we have better options, right? And we also just have to take account for our whole health, right? So fluoride is something topical. Our body is not deficient in fluoride, right? And we get fluoride from so many different sources now. And so people are really becoming, you know, having this fluoride accumulate in their body for so long, right? We're getting it from our water. We're getting it from our products. We're getting it at the dental practice in these trays or these varnishes. And a lot of people are getting too much, right? So it actually does the opposite, right? It's meant to harden the teeth, make them more resistant to decay, which it can do, but it's also a neurotoxin, right? So we want to weigh the good and the bad. And so for me, I think the bad outweighs the good. So it's not something that I recommend. I would much more like to focus on supporting the body's natural ability to remineralize. And I think that is one of the most important things that we can do to have that lifelong health and lifelong free from disease. So I think that's something that we should always be working on.
What are some of your suggestions for good substitutes for fluoride?
Healthy diet, right? With those fat soluble vitamins and minerals. I think there's a lot of products on the market and it's tough to say exactly which one is best for who. There's certain ingredients that are going to be really beneficial for our teeth and our gum tissue and our bones. So things like vitamin C, CoQ10, prebiotics, right? If we can find products that contain those are great options. You know, there's a lot of talk about hydroxyapatite, and I feel like this is a topic that I'm diving a lot deeper into because a lot of new things coming out. So to me, it's something that I have used. I have recommended a lot, but like there's a lot of different talk right now and a lot of studies coming out on whether nanohydroxyapatite is safe or regular hydroxyapatite. So the jury's kind of still out on this one for me. It's still something that I recommend currently because if we have someone that has that really high decay rate, we want to make sure that we have something to use. And this has been a better option. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure that it is the safest option. So I'm kind of doing a little bit more research on what I think is best in this case.
Okay, that's interesting because I use it and I use it in my toothpaste and I use it in my kids' toothpaste because kind of how it was communicated to me was if you're going to take fluoride out of your toothpaste, you want to replace it with something else to help strengthen. And this is such a good alternative because it's natural. Our teeth, our bones are made out of it. I use Nano. My kids use Nano too. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear what the new research is saying about that because I always thought that that was just blanket statement safer. And it might be no matter what safer than fluoride, right? But yeah, to see more research come out to understand it on like a deeper level too.
Yeah, I think that's important is to always be open to new ideas, new concepts as new science comes out. And I think that is a big thing that we want to consider, right? Hydroxyapatite is made of the crystalline structure that our teeth are made of. So it definitely is a more biocompatible and body-friendly option. So if you are prone to decay, we do want something, right, that's going to help remineralize that enamel, make it stronger, make it more resistant to decay. But not everybody needs remineralization support in their toothpaste, right? Some people may benefit from a toothpaste that is just really nourishing with some of those like vitamin C, CoQ10, prebiotics, right? It really depends on how prone to decay you are. So not everybody has that high probability of cavities.
What about kids? Like, do kids really need it? Because I feel like, this is going to sound a little harsh, but like, I feel like I'm told all the time how my kids need to have fluoride every visit because they're still growing, they're still developing and this and that. And I just don't know. Like, is that true?
Yeah, it's tough to say because kids burn through minerals really quickly, right? So sometimes they do need a little bit more support depending on how well they're either allowing you to help them brush or they're doing it on their own, right? If we leave that plaque and biofilm on the teeth for too long, it makes it more prone to developing cavities. So sometimes we do want to bring in a little bit more. I think trace minerals, adding it to kids' water is a good option too. Just making sure we're getting that systemic mineral balance. If you're seeing hair tests on kids, so like, right, a lot of times they're burning through minerals so quickly, they're more sympathetic dominant because they're growing and developing. So a lot of times we do just want to bring in some more trace minerals to their water or to their diet as well.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. That's an easy swap that I can easily do too. Okay, so if somebody wants to find a biological dentist, where do we go? Where do we find it in our area? Is it something we can just Google? Is there a database? How could someone get that process started?
Yeah, there's a few places that you can look. There's two big organizations that have directories of biological dentists. So IABDM and IAOMT are both of those organizations, and there's directories on there. And so you'll be able to pull up your area specifically and then see who is located in your area. You should also be able to search biological dentist near me or holistic dentist near me, and people should come up there as well. But if you look on those organizations, you know exactly what programs they've gone through. You can see their bio and kind of what education and experience they have.
And so when we're looking at someone's education, is there a certain important thing we should be looking for that dentist?
There's so many different courses, and I feel like there's so many different paths that dentists go on. That's the thing with biological dentistry. It's not necessarily a specialty. It's more of a philosophy. So there's a lot of different coursework that people have done. You know, if they've done any type of accreditation with these organizations, that's a good thing for them to have. So it will say on there if they're accredited with the organization. depending on what you're going for, you might be going for, say, smart removal. You want to make sure that they are smart certified and they have all of the setup in the office to remove those fillings safely.
Is that removing the mercury fillings? Because they have all the O's, they have everything that they need to remove it safely.
All of the things in their office, exactly. So you want to make sure that they are smart certified if you're looking for that. If you're looking for ceramic implants or oral surgery, right, there's dentists that are very specialized in that as well. So I would kind of look at that depending on what you might need.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know I have one mercury filling in my mouth and I just had my heavy metals tested and I have higher mercury and I am not getting mercury. I've changed everything over. Someone asked me like, oh, do you have a filling? I'm like, I do. I have one filling, you know, and I went to my dentist. I'm like, is it lifting? Is it shifting? Is it moving? You know, and she said no, but it's always in the back of my head. Like, you know, mercury is coming from somewhere. If I've shifted everything in my diet, in my lifestyle, in my environment, it has to be coming from somewhere, right? And so that's good to know. Is there any negative kickback for getting the mercury? Like, I'm so nervous to get the mercury removed because I don't know, what if it just makes me feel nervous? I'm like opening up a can of worms, or what if something happens? Like, is there any drawback to lifting that out, or is it more of the drawback of keeping it in?
So if it's not done safely, if it's not done under that smart protocol with the ionizers and the ventilation and really isolating the tooth and using certain supplements to support the body in clearing and binding the heavy metals, right, a patient can become more sick because the two greatest exposures to mercury are when those fillings are placed and then when they're removed unsafely. So you were going to remove it 100%, I would say you want to go through the smart protocol and have it removed that way. The other big thing to consider when it comes to mercury removal is, are your detox pathways open, right? So if someone's detox pathways aren't open, they're not actually able to clear the mercury, we might not feel better after we remove it. So if someone's not sweating regularly, if they're not breathing well, if their liver and kidneys aren't functioning, if their digestion is off, the lymphatic system's not moving, all of those things can actually block the mercury from being removed from the body safely. So I would always focus on that to prepare, is making sure that you're actually able to clear, bringing in the right targeted supplementation to bind and remove. And then in that case, I think it's better to remove it if we do it safely, and making sure that you're in a state of health at the time that you're doing it, right? We don't want you in like a chronic flare of autoimmune, or we don't want you in a state of health where, you know, we have a lot of dysregulation. We want to do it when you're feeling good and remove it following that safe protocol.
Yeah, you want your immune system up and running and firing at all cylinders. And yeah, I can understand that. If your detox pathways are blocked or not able to get rid of the heavy metals, it's just getting stuck in our tissue, then it's just harboring in our body and can go into our brain and all of that. So okay, that makes sense too. Well, this was so informative. Let's leave the audience with say if somebody's listening and they're like, this is so interesting, I would love to kind of get started with more holistic dentistry. What's 2 to 3 simple changes that someone can just make right away, right off the bat, to help support their oral health?
Yeah, I would say swapping out your products. If you have products that contain a lot of toxic ingredients, right, I would want to clean those out right away. So taking an audit of the products that you're using to make sure what you're using is safe and effective. I think adding in a tongue scraper, if you are not doing that currently, can be such a beneficial tool. I think training your body to breathe through your nose is huge. So if you are someone that mouth breathes during the day or at night, I'd start to look at different exercises or different things that you can do to really support nasal breathing, because that's going to change your health in such a beautiful way. And I really think it is, you know, getting support where you need it, right? You know, you might be able to do some things, but to be able to personalize it to you and work with your body specifically, I think is really powerful. So I think always trying to find like a personalized approach can be really helpful.
Well, this was so great. Thank you so much for your advice and expertise. I was so excited to talk to you, and it definitely did not disappoint. I feel like you answered everything so gracefully and such an informative episode for people too. I think everyone's going to learn a lot. Tell everyone where they can find you as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It has been a pleasure. You can find me on Instagram at NaturallyAmberWhite, and my website is just NaturallyAmberWhite.com. So those are probably the easiest ways to find me.
Amazing. And I will link both of those in the show notes. So for anyone listening, go right to the show notes and both of those resources will be there. Thank you so much, Amber. We will talk soon.
Thank you so much, Michelle.